Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. There is a growing trend among corporations in this country to think in terms beyond simply making higher profits. They are increasingly assuming a greater degree of social responsibility. It's taking many forms, from charitable giving to supporting various community projects to helping people in need. Many will admit that more than generosity or responsibility is involved, that finding the right cause can also lead to marketing success. Our subject today is corporate responsibility. We'll talk with representatives of two companies heavily involved in corporate social responsibility, or CSR, projects. Maxine Clark is founder and chief executive of Build-A-Bear Workshop. Her company is involved with numerous charities and initiatives, including Huggable Bears, which honors young people for their impact on their neighborhoods, schools, and communities. We'll also hear from Michael Simon, executive vice president at Panera Bread. The company has made headlines for what it calls a social experiment of letting people pay what they want at selected stores. The idea is to help feed the needy and increase awareness of the problem of hunger in America. With me in studio is Jim Fisher, who chairs the marketing department at St. Louis University and is interim director of the Emerson Ethics Center there. Jim, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me get your take on this corporate responsibility issue.
Well, as you say, it's a growing area. Companies are becoming increasingly aware of the many different audiences or stakeholders that they have to be responsive to. So management is challenged to recognize that they're viewed by different groups, and that also as organizations that have a lot of power, that with that power comes responsibility. And so they try to be mindful of how they're perceived by these groups, and to fully understand their expectations, and then to act appropriately. So there's that dimension of it, sort of the perceptual dimension.
We all remember John D. Rockefeller going way back, even before our time, Jim. But this particular aspect of it seems relatively new.
Well, sure. I think some of it is leveraged by the fact that we have such good communication technologies, that the footprint of business has enlarged significantly. Over the past decade or so, I think sensitivities have been increased by environmental issues and by the downswing in the economy as well. So if you ask people what one of the most important issues on the landscape today is, it would be jobs and economic development. So I think we're keenly aware of how dependent our future prosperity, our livelihoods are on business, yet we also recognize there are downsides to some aspects of business. And so, as always, it's an issue of keeping these things in balance. And sometimes things get out of balance. And when that happens, people get hurt. And
I have a note here saying that 74% of the top 100 corporations involved in corporate responsibility programs. That's a pretty hefty percentage.
True. Although one could say that, more generally speaking, businesses have always been about social responsibility. At least they are in a larger social network. They hire people. They contribute to economic growth. And so as a member of that social contract, they have been discharging social responsibility, and some better than others. I think what's new in this current era is that broadened sensibility of what a business's social responsibility is. And as a result, I think you find different people with different opinions about the extent and limitations of that social responsibility.
Back when he was running for Congress, Todd Akin, who made headlines with other comments that he made, told us on this program that he thought the answer to the health care problem in this country was to have corporations take responsibility for this particular issue, that they had the resources to help out the 35 or 40 million people who didn't have health insurance. He was widely ridiculed for making those comments on our air. But now I wonder, given what's going on, was he onto something?
Well, I think that corporations are often perceived by, because they are so powerful, because they have such a profound influence on our lives, are sometimes thought of as having, very deep pockets. But on the other hand, the life of a corporation is a relatively short one. And so corporations, in order to be successful, have to focus in a very tight way upon what they do. And that's typically, you know, delivering products and services, and they're doing that in a very competitive environment. So the prospect of them, you know, moving into areas like, you know, healthcare and wellness programs, it comes at some risk.
I spoke yesterday with Michael Simon, Executive Vice President at Panera Bread, on the issue of corporate responsibility. 3 years ago, Panera established the first of its Panera Care community cafes, offering food at no set prices. Now the company's expanding the idea, offering the meal of shared responsibility, a specific meal, turkey chili, as it turns out. Someone who's hungry need pay nothing. Others may pay what they wish, including more, to cover the cost of those who pay nothing. In my conversation with Michael Simon, he spoke of it all as a social experiment.
We have been trying to raise awareness for the issue of food insecurity in America, which is a significant one. 50 million people do not know where their next meal is coming from. And given that we were in the food business, we wanted to reach out and try to leverage our scale and expertise in ways to try to both bring awareness and also help people in need. Our first foray into addressing or helping in this fight against food insecurity was Panera Cares Cafes. And then we more recently said, well, these are five cafes. Could we leverage our scale and extend it to all 1,600 of cafes that we have? And we first wanted to test it in our home market, St. Louis. And we saw it as a social experiment because this is a community responsibility in trying to make this sustainable and successful. We operate restaurants, and that's an expertise of ours. So our part of this was to build the store and operate the store. But in order for it to sustain, the community itself has to subsidize those in need. And the social experiment really is, would, in this case, the St. Louis community step up and help their neighbors who, you know, were having a difficult time or looking to a bridge to something better. Through at least the first 6 or 7 weeks, we have been very happy to say that the St. Louis community has stood up for those in need within St. Louis, and so far we've sold about 10,000 units of this meal of shared responsibility. About 30% of the sales have been people who've paid a little less, those in need. 40% of the people have paid the suggested retail price, and 30% have paid a little more.
In terms of dollars and cents, it sounds like you're pretty close to breaking even on this.
Yeah, for the first 6 or 7 weeks, the yield or the percent of retail is about 95%. We need about 60 to 70% to break even, so we're actually making a little money. And any money that's made above our cost, we've actually been working with Covenant House, with programs for youth at risk, to help train people within our cafes so they can get back on their feet and hopefully give them some skills and rebuild their self-esteem so they could continue to build their life and live off a full, happy life.
Michael, it seems that more and more corporations are doing this, getting into this area of social involvement, social responsibility, and that this is really a phenomenon of the last few years. What is going on in the corporate world?
Well, I would say a couple things. Our general belief is that doing well and doing good go hand in hand. If we can create deeper connection with the communities that we serve by giving back to the communities, it helps our business. And when it helps our business, we can actually reinvest some of those incremental profits back into the good that we're trying to create. So I think particularly for a public company like us, our DNA has always been about giving back and helping the communities we serve, but it also serves the needs of our business.
So while there is a very large, obvious altruistic component, there also is a marketing perspective that you've taken into consideration as well.
Yeah, I think we have, certainly we have a responsibility to our shareholders, but we believe by, as I said before, by investing in the community, it not only supports and helps those in need within our communities, but it also drives our business.
That's Michael Simon, Executive Vice President at Panera Bread, telling us what his corporation has been doing with regard to the corporate responsibility issue that we have been discussing on this program. Joining us now in studio is Maxine Clark, who is the Chief Executive Bear, if you will, at Build-A-Bear. Thank you so much, Maxine, for being with us.
Glad to be here.
If you will, tell us how this whole idea got started with your company.
Oh, who knows exactly the day that I decided that Build-A-Bear would be Build-A-Bear, but about 15 years ago, I was out shopping with my best friend, Katie, doing what I like to do, which is mentoring young people. And we were discussing a project, and we said she had an idea, like, why don't we make these stuffed animals? And that's how Build-A-Bear was born. But I wanted to create a company. I knew, well, I didn't know what it was. I knew it was going to be a company that gave back because children were our core customers, children and families. And if we could set an example for them, for their not just the where they spend their money, that's a part of the project. But while they were buying and shopping in our store, they could become better people and be inspired to be all that they could be, then that would be the ultimate product sale, so to speak.
How would you assess the outcome of this after these many years of doing this?
I would say that it's been incredibly successful. If I just went by the letters alone that we get, but one of our core programs is our Huggable Heroes program, which inspires young people to be social entrepreneurs. And we have this year we'll crown, I think, our over 100 of these young people that we've been honoring through the years who submit their application, and we invest in their 501c3 that they've created to help them take it to the next level, as well as investing some money in their college education so that they can take this business with them into their adult life.
But, you know, you mentioned Huggable Heroes, and that's just one of many. You're all over the map on the foundation's work.
Yes, we have a lot of programs, but they're all focused on children and families for the most part. And how do we engage our customer in this process so that it's not about just selling teddy bears and a portion of the proceeds of the teddy bear, is that it really means something. It connects for the consumer. And that we also reflect the needs of those communities that we serve. Like the last few days in Oklahoma, we've had customers knocking on our doors, how many bears can we make, and will you distribute them for us in Oklahoma City? And of course we will. So it was just hours after the tragedy happened that customers were already asking us to participate, and they want a way. The average person is a good person and wants their children also to be great people, and they do look for ways that they can show and set an example for their children, and Build-A-Bear is always first in line to help them do that.
I have to take a break. I want to pick up on that point and get Jim Fisher back into the conversation. We'll do that, but we have to take this break at this time. You've just heard from Maxine Clark, who is the chief executive at Build-A-Bear. We have Jim Fisher with us. He chairs the marketing department at St. Louis University. You heard earlier from Michael Simon, an executive vice president at Panera Bread. Back to continue the conversation. If you'd like to get into it, we will welcome your calls at 382-8255. It's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. And we, of course, will take a tweet at STL on Air. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on corporate social responsibility. I have with me in studio Maxine Clark, founder and chief executive at Build-A-Bear here in St. Louis. Jim Fisher chairs the marketing department at St. Louis University. We heard earlier from Michael Simon, executive vice president at Panera Bread. Jim Fisher, let me turn to you. You've heard Michael Simon and you've heard Maxine Clark. What's your take from what they have had to say?
Well, I think that they're both doing a lot of good, but they're also very smart, I think, in what they're doing. One of the things I noticed about Michael's comments that I appreciated was his notion of partnership and the extent to which they're in partnership with their customers. I think that's smart. In order to extend your social impact, you can't do it alone, and it gets very much to the core of the business enterprise when you start doing things in partnership with your customers, with your employees. Also, too, I like the notion of experiment. I think he used the word experiment a half a dozen times, mm-hmm. and that's the kind of spirit I think that you need to take to this kind of enterprise, to do things that are interesting and to have a certain tolerance for failure, because if you don't have that willingness to risk and try something new, you aren't going to hit the big home run and make the innovation. And not to be missed in all this, too, is that, you know, they're on the conversational agenda. People talk about these things. People take notice. Maxine used the word DNA. I noticed that both of these companies in sort of enlarging their sense of social responsibility do things that are close to their core business. So it's not – they're not getting too far afield from what is their – essence. So I think that's smart as well.
Yeah, that was alluded to in the introduction as well, Maxine. And the fact of the matter is that while, as I mentioned in the interview with Mr. Simon, altruism is obvious, but also it's a great marketing tool.
It is a good marketing tool. And I think that today's families and children particularly are very engaged in their environment, literally the environment, meaning, you know, they care about what's going on and recycling and things like that. But they also know that it is not just about them. And I think their parents are more focused than ever on trying to help them see that they're not the center of the universe. And we try to support that with helping kids see what it's like to have grit, you know, to stick with something, to use your creativity when they come into our store on their products, to be self-reliant. They can do it themselves. And also to have a community engagement, because you don't just live in this world by yourself. And I think that the other really important thing is that one child, one person can make a difference, and it can multiply. And kids have a way of multiplying it, because it's really hard to say no to a child. And so when a child's doing something good for the community and we can inspire that, then many, many people join in, and it's multiplied, you know, 100 times over.
You know, there are many cynics out there, and I received a couple of communications earlier today with folks suggesting that the reason corporations are doing this is not only for the marketing purposes, but they get a tax advantage by doing it.
I don't really look so much at that. We have accountants that worry about that. We really do it because we know that that it's about engagement, that you cannot have a transaction without an interaction. And we try to have a human interaction in everything and relate to our customers. And if it makes them smile, that's really the product that we sell. And there's lots of ways to make people smile.
That seems to make sense, Jim Fisher.
Indeed. There can be a lot of purposes, a lot of reasons for companies engaging in these kind of actions. Maxine, you know, referred to her customers, and certainly this has, I think, an impact in drawing new customers. Also, I think it's important in attracting talent. People are selective. People can be less selective these days about where they work, but I think people do exercise selectivity and want to work with companies and for companies that are engaged in these kind of enterprises. They want to work with companies that are good to work with.
And we should point out there's nothing wrong with generating business and creating new customers, because that in and of itself helps create jobs and does many things. And by the way, there's some good being done along the way. I think it's very clear from what Mr. Simon said and what Maxine has said that this, in fact, is accomplishing a lot of good.
Right. And I think, you know, this issue of social responsibility, our corporate social responsibility, is probably in its early stages of formation. And so I think we're going to find businesses increasingly doing innovative things, but also strategically sound things that make sense in terms of attracting talent and even for the bottom line. So we can look for that in the future.
One thing that I grew up in the May department stores, a very charitable company, but most of the work was work they did, and we as employees could be proud of it. But today, you're right about the talent. People want to be a part of something that's bigger than them, and they want to be sure that it's sustainable. And so whenever we have activities that go out and build playgrounds or work for the United Way, everybody gets very excited about it and, you know, volunteers to do something that's bigger. They don't have to do it. It's not part of their job responsibility. Mm-hmm. And at Build-A-Bear, we've been voted one of the 100 best companies to work for 5 years in a row. It shows up every time on the survey that one of the things that they like the best about working in our company is the work that we do and allow them to do in their own individual communities, at their church, at their synagogue, at their children's school. It's a big plus.
Well, you mentioned the May Company, and I mentioned cynicism before. There's also skepticism. We have an email from Terry. I have increased skepticism every day, especially with the recent closing by Macy's downtown, formerly Famous Bar, owned by the May Company, closing the downtown store. That national company seemed to show no responsibility to the revitalization of downtown. I feel very leery of any corporation telling me they care about anything other than the bottom line. I'll ask you, Maxine, to comment on that.
I think that they it's a tough situation. You have to operate a big store, and there's a lot of expenses that go along with it, and they're not a charity. And I think they have very profitable operations here in St. Louis, and they've put a lot of people to work here in St. Louis. They've retained a lot of associates. So I don't know how expensive it is to operate that building, but I remember it was never one of the most profitable parts of the May Company business, and I've been away from the May Company for 17 years. So even back then, I think they sustained it about as long as they could, and now they had to make some choices. But I think that there, because of what's going on downtown, there will be some other exciting uses for that building, and we just have to get on that.
We managed to survive to this point with a number of losses downtown of major companies, and Stixbear and Fuller comes to mind, and there are many others like that of equal size. Jim, do you have any thoughts about that?
Sure. It's tough to be in business and to stay in business. You know, the competitors are out to get you. Consumers' tastes are constantly changing. And so it's important for businesses to reinvent themselves and to remain competitive. And that often involves some basic changes like store location or where you're doing business or even what you're offering. So, the skepticism, I can understand that. But on the other hand, businesses are in a very dynamic environment. And if they don't do things well and execute at really peak capacity, they're not going to be around for the long run.
Maxine, even a very successful company like yours has to evolve and change and go with the flow as times change, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We've seen a big change in our business since the recession. In fact, we probably saw it earlier than some when gas prices started to go up. It's a discretionary product, and we've had to adjust our store count. In fact, it's really helping our business right now that we had to close some stores around the country. So other stores actually are doing a whole lot better, much more than we thought. Mm-hmm. And it's really helping because we're a destination, and we can drive people to fewer locations and operate with lower costs and therefore employ more people. So we actually didn't have to, we could move people into our existing stores if they wanted to go close by, and we were able to really drive traffic by having fewer stores. So sometimes it's more efficient. Maybe the economy will turn around and we'll be able to have more stores in the future, but right now it makes sense to be a little bit leaner, a little bit meaner machine.
Are you saying it's a net plus for you after
yes,
all of this?
Yes, definitely a net plus so far this year anyway, as we reported in our first quarter.
Back to my notes here, because I read an article in which economist Milton Friedman was heavily quoted. He says, the only social responsibility corporations have is to make money for their stockholders and keep prices low. He says, putting profits into social causes is spending someone else's money. Jim, is he right?
Milton Friedman does make a good argument. I think what Milton Friedman points to there is one of the historical fissures in the 20th century, which has been the division between management on the one hand and ownership on the other. So when you do have executives making money, they do have a very important and central fiduciary responsibility to those that own the business. This goes, I think, to the importance of making sure that your sense of social responsibility aligns with your DNA, with what you're about as a business, so that over the long haul, you're accountable for the ways in which you are, at least if you're a public held company, the ways in which you're spending other people's money.
That's absolutely correct. And I think that we are not detached from each other. So if we have very poor schools in our community and children aren't getting a good education, you're not going to be able to hire good workers, and they're not going to have jobs where they can spend money in your businesses. So it is all connected. There is not you can't disconnect from this. And it's an opportunity to make the world better at the same time with a profit, ultimately certainly a profit motive in mind, to be able to have more jobs and employ more people and support more ideas that can generate new businesses and new products and services.
You know, where is all this going, Maxine Clark? Are we potentially getting to a point where social responsibility on the part of our corporations could be displacing and replacing some government programs, which are so stretched to the limit right now?
Oh, I think it's definitely a pressure point. I think that as those programs become less and less, or in communities where the businesses take more responsibility for something that matters in their community, and they can personalize it to St. Louis or Oklahoma City or wherever it happens to be, then it can probably be more sustainable. You can count on it because you can control it. And I think that's really what's happened, is that some of these things are not controllable. Your funding is, you know, more happenstance these days than it used to be. And so you'd rather have control over it. The other is the merging of some of these ideas to two organizations that might be have a similar objective, coming together to reduce overhead and to work together. I call it, a friend coined this word, cooperative instead of competitive. You're still trying to cure cancer or you're trying to educate kids. Can you find common ground and work together as with a business mentality applied to that possible not-for-profit in order to be more successful?
What do you think, Jim? Is there any chance that some government programs will be displaced, replaced by this?
Oh, I think there is. I think that, but more generally, that interface between business on the one hand and government on the other has always been one subject for negotiation. And so when it comes to issues like the role of government, you know, we have elections pretty frequently where we try to get that, we get that right. So I think there's a role for business. But I don't think ultimately that we're going to have businesses making public policy.
No, yeah, we have a final email here that I'll read. Again, it seems to me there are some doubters out there in the audience today. What I find dubious is that when companies that have ethical issues such as Monsanto and BP suddenly come out with campaigns that look good, but in the scheme of things are not much more than a PR campaign. People are not stupid, and they can tell the difference between businesses that care and those that are pandering. There is that element of it, too. Not associating any of the people that we're dealing with here today with that, but that's out there.
Well, that's why it's important to have a point of view on this issue of social responsibility. So if you have a sensitivity to what's going on in the larger environment, you can get ahead of some of these issues or maybe anticipate them. For example, there's a lot of concern now about childhood obesity and our diets. If I were a food company, I would want to be thinking about how we as a company are going to respond to this and how we get ahead of that issue and don't simply react to it.
There's a lot of concern out there today, this very day, about food stamps and cutting the budget there, too. So this is where Panera might possibly come in. Maxine Clark, do you want to put a final thought out us before we say goodbye?
I was just going to say that I think it's about authenticity and that the customer wants to connect with a business and they want to believe it. And some are, it's not going to appeal to everybody, and you have to really come from your DNA, as we like to say. We don't try to make up things that we can't be good at, and we want to inspire our customers, especially the children, to set an example in our communities for the future.
Perhaps if the companies that were cited in that email had tried a little harder a little earlier, they might not be getting the criticism they're getting today. We have to end it there. I want to thank you so much, Maxine Clark, for being with us. Okay. Continued success at Build-A-Bear. Jim Fisher, thank you for being with us. A pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
We want to thank Michael Simon of Panera Bread for being with us as well. Let's see. Coming up, summer jobs for kids. The kids at risk, by the way. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU.